Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today are two guests from San Diego is Daryl Contreras. Daryl is Chief Compliance Officer at Millennium Health. And joining us today from Rio Rancho, New Mexico is David Nelson, best known as Privacy Guy from Privacy Guy Solutions. Daryl was the editorial lead for Healthcare Privacy Compliance Handbook 3rd Edition. And David was one of the main contributors to the publication. What we're going to be talking about today is what's in the handbook as well as what's going on in privacy. So first of all, thank you both for taking the time to talk with us. And Daryl, why don't we start with you? What can people find in the new version of the handbook?
Yeah, thank you, Adam. The new version of the handbook is really an update to the prior versions. And what that means is for the person who's trying to get a good reference point for healthcare privacy laws and regulations, this handbook gives you a good baseline for that. We went through the structure of it. We've covered a lot of different areas from, of course, HIPAA and breach notification, but then also research, health plan and payer issues, FERPA or Family Education Rights and Protection Act, the Privacy Act of 1974, 42 CFR Part 2, which affect a lot of our treatment centers these days, and then just some other tips and guides for healthcare privacy professionals who are looking to help build out their privacy programs or strengthen their privacy programs. The chapters and the people who contributed to these, they're all experts in the area. I can tell you from reading the chapters and looking at them, they're very knowledgeable. They bring years of experience. And so you're not just getting somebody regurgitating the law, but you're actually getting that regurgitation plus perspective. And those examples and perspectives can really help to take what can sometimes be difficult to understand concepts and bring them down to something that is easier for the reader to understand. The one thing I would say is that even though there are a lot of thanks for the contributors in here, the one person whose name is missing, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention it, is Nancy Gordon. And Nancy spent a lot of time putting everything together and chasing all of us down who have otherwise full schedules, trying to make sure that we got these things done and really put together a very quality manual for everybody to take a look at.
It's nice of you to say that. And I think you brought up a very good point here is that this handbook was designed to be a practical tool, not just a legal document that reviewed what the requirements are, but something that compliance people can sit down and say, okay, these are five things that I should be doing right now because of it. Now, David, let's capitalize on your expertise and talk about some key areas of healthcare privacy. Let's start with FERPA. What's new there?
Oh, well, first of all, we have to kind of narrow it down a little bit. It is the Federal Education Rights and Protection Act. And what that law actually does is establish rights for individuals who are in schools, basically, and that's what we're talking about, and what their rights are like. And it kind of bumps up against healthcare in a couple of spots. I ran into it all the time. Government has programs. And one of the things we did with FERPA to ensure that people would know what it is, because we want well-rounded privacy officers in the industry, is to include this so that if they ran into it, they would have some idea of what's going on. There's been, more than anything else, clarification, which is very, very useful. When it came out originally in 2007-08 and rolled out, it was a little bit confusing. Now, for primary education, which will take everything from, kindergarten all the way to, 12th grade, the end of high school, that pretty much falls into what we call the education record there. But then it became more complicated when we went out into secondary education. And all of a sudden, we had health clinics and spots, and nobody was quite sure what to do. And so the Department of Education and Health and Human Services put out a guidance on it. But you had to have a really good background on both sides of the fence, understand what education is and understand what healthcare is. Otherwise, the document was a little confusing at points. So here, just a couple years ago, they went ahead and updated it, and they just recently put out a new guidance on that so you can understand where it goes. And probably the biggest thing that came out of the Federal Register, when they published the new rule, is the clarification of what they now call a FERPA treatment record. These are records that are college-age students, we'll say that, we won't go into the details of the regulation, and they are collected there in clinics. Students are 18 or older and post-secondary education, but they're collected by what we would call healthcare professionals, physicians, psychiatrists, psychologists, or associated professions like that. And these records are there and used exclusively for treatment. They're not actually part of the education record. The average teacher, administrator in school really does not need to know that a student has toe fungus or hearing loss. Unless it's an accommodation, it doesn't really make any difference. So the treatment record is separated from the rest of it. And that's where all of a sudden we bump into HIPAA, because if it's a treatment record, the regulation excludes it from the education record. And so all of a sudden we have this issue where some clinics on college campuses and universities actually have to apply the HIPAA rules. It's kind of a surprising thing when you see it. And personally, I'm very grateful in dealing with this that they have clarified this and put it in plain English. It makes it so much easier to explain to people about why they might have to apply the other rules. And really the bottom line on that is, if it's just like when I went to college at Lewis and Clark in Portland, the clinic was contracted out, was in a separate building from everything else. All the records stayed over there. And education, they really didn't know over my other record that I had gone there at all for toe fungus or hangnails or a broken finger or anything like that. It was totally separate. And that's the situation where that clinic would act, well, more than likely covered by HIPAA. And the real caveat on that is, are they transmitting one of the covered transactions? And that's getting deep into the regulation. But I'm very happy that they've clarified all this. Also within that treatment bubble is, if you allow the staff of the college to come into the clinic, now you have two kinds of records, because staff don't have an education record. So what does that mean in the clinic with that record? And all of a sudden we look at it's falling over onto the side of HIPAA, and we have to begin to apply those rules and regulations. So it's pretty much more clear now that they have defined a FERPA treatment record. And that is one of the other updates. They did clarify in the definitions several things that were just a wee bit fuzzy. They were neither truly healthcare nor truly education. And now those lines have been drawn. And that's really what the update was all about, the big piece on it.
Well, I think it really shows how things are changed. I mean, it's great that there's this clarification, but it also shows that as we've gone from paper records that would be kept in a separate building and no one would look at to electronic records, there's just more complexity created from a privacy perspective. Now, there's also been changes to 42 CFR Part 2, which, as you well know, deals with substance abuse and is likely really timely given the reported spike of overdoses during the pandemic. What do compliance teams need to note there?
Well, probably the biggest thing is to go and get the new set of definitions. There's like two dozen terms in there that have been clarified and updated, and it kind of works towards electronic records. How do you look at those? How do you view those? One of the big ones is they have clarified that with written consent, you can use the information for payment and healthcare operations. That wasn't clear before. Billings and claims management, that wasn't clear. QA, QI wasn't clear. Patient safety goes right down the list, and those permitted disclosures under an authorization or consent form are now permitted, and it's very, very clear. And probably one of the biggest ones is that you can check with other organizations to see if you're not providing duplicate services. That's one of the things both in HIPAA and in 42 CFR is you can look to prevent the duplication of services. The baseline of HIPAA was always to help prevent fraud in the system. That's one of the three principal activities. There's several things taking place in there, and it takes a bit of time to break it down, but I think we've done a good job, and I'm with Daryl. I really congratulate the editors for catching things. When I wrote the 42 CFR, they actually had a revision come out just literally a month before publication. So we had to update a bit. Without them looking, we never would have known that was there. So definitions is the big place to start. That really helps you a lot in complying with this regulation.
Great, good to know. Now, the pandemic has led to a host of changes elsewhere, including HIPAA. Daryl, what do compliance teams need to focus on in this area?
I think one of the things that we've been focusing on with, as it pertains to HIPAA within the pandemic world is this shift to remote workforce. And with that shift, what you've done is you've now taken what was a once secured self-contained network, perhaps everybody working on site, and now people are now remote, and now you're outside of the fence. And that has created additional issues and concerns on the HIPAA security side primarily. When you look at that, what you've got is, how do you control and how do you secure the information on your laptop now, where maybe before it was your desktop, but now you have the ability to be remote and you're no longer within your firewall, or how do you get that? The other thing that we saw happen was on April 8th of this year, the Department of Homeland Security announced that they have seen an increase in COVID-related phishing attempts, and basically people taking advantage of the fact that people are now working remote to send emails or other attempts to gain access into your network by what would appear to be a legitimate email. And so consequently, we've really had to increase our training and awareness on how to protect against phishing. But even for us, what we've done is create secondary backup protections in case somebody does click on that link. And it's not just for phishing, but for other things. So primarily it's the increased attacks, but then that diminished security that we once had when we were all on site that has made it a lot more challenging. So our focus has shifted to HIPAA security.
So we're almost out of time, but let me just ask you both quickly. What do you think is likely to come next that compliance teams need to start preparing for in the privacy sphere? Daryl?
I think there are always changes. I think that how we treat patients now, we're doing more telemedicine. And so where that patient information is, how we're keeping it, how we're maintaining it, who's got access to it. I think this the new remote environment is creating that shift in how we create patient records and see patients and maintain the privacy of that patient. I think it also increases the scope of people who could inadvertently get that information in an unauthorized fashion, which would of course be a violation of HIPAA. So we want to be careful about that and make sure that we're really expanding our privacy program to encompass the new ways in which we are encountering patients.
David, do you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, just briefly, actually, it ties right in with that nicely. Is my thought is that we are continuing in the industry to build health information exchange networks. And just as Daryl said, we have to look into the future. How can we best serve that client to get them the best care they possibly can without violating rights? And the right structure and the right policies and procedures, auditing and monitoring of those systems is where it's key. So I'm lined up with Daryl really squarely on that.
Great. Well, thank you both for those thoughts, the insights you shared today, and all the work you put into the third edition of the Healthcare Privacy Compliance Handbook. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.